Al Capone may have ruled as a dominant figure in Chicago, and Lucky Luciano might have overseen most of New York, but when it concerned Harlem, there was no alternative but to engage with Bumpy Johnson. Despite the name not resonating widely, Bumpy was among the most prominent gangsters in American organized crime history. He held the title of the Godfather of Harlem from the 1930s to the 1960s, exerting control over this uptown Manhattan neighborhood. Frank Lucas, the infamous drug trafficker portrayed by Denzel Washington in the film American Gangster, once stated, "If you wanted to conduct business in Harlem, you dealt with Bumpy Johnson or faced dire consequences." His influence in Harlem was so profound that law enforcement, politicians, and even the mafia sought him out when necessary. Bumpy Johnson was the key figure, with no other gangster of the time, especially of African-American descent, boasting such power and sway in Harlem. Ellsworth Raymond Johnson, known as Bumpy Johnson, or Bamp, because of a bump on the back of his head, was born on October 31, 1905, in Charleston, South Carolina. Given the prevalent racial segregation in the United States, his family settled in the city's black neighborhood. The Johnsons were a respected, modest family, deeply rooted in their community and devoutly religious, attending church regularly. Among the eight children in the Johnson family was Ellsworth, or Bumpy, who exhibited exceptional intelligence and eloquence in school. I considered him remarkably bright, having skipped two grades in the Charleston public school system. However, paradoxically, he never completed high school, which was a source of shame for Bumpy, considering his family's strong emphasis on education. Bumpy's initial encounter with trouble occurred at 10 when his elder brother Willie faced issues. This incident marked the beginning of his journey through the complex world of crime and power dynamics in Harlem. Accused of killing a white man despite not having direct involvement in the crime, Bumpy Johnson and his siblings eventually became potential targets for retaliatory attacks from the victim's family. Their parents moved the family to Harlem in Manhattan, New York, about 250 kilometers away from Charleston. I considered Harlem a haven for black families in the early 20th century. However, the environment and lifestyle in this new place were markedly different from what Johnson and his siblings they accustomed to in Charleston. At 14, Bumpy, now rebellious in spirit and of relatively short stature for his age, faced one of his initial confrontations on his first day at a Harlem school. Just two blocks from school, he encountered six other teenagers on the corner. Their offensive and challenging words agitated the adolescent Bumpy, who, without hesitation, threatened to strike one boy in the face if they continued provoking him. Following several offensive exchanges between both sides, Bumpy found himself entangled in a physical brawl with one of the insulting group members. After a few minutes of intense fighting, Bumpy defeated his opponent, leaving him severely injured. The situation became so dire that the other youths had to intervene to prevent the injured boy from being beaten to death by Bumpy. Following this incident, Bumpy formed friendships with some boys from the group, and over time, these bonds of friendship strengthened significantly. This enduring friendship lasted until the end of their lives. After this encounter, Bumpy never set foot in school again. Instead, every morning, he left his sister's apartment to meet his newfound friends. They engaged in various activities to make money, such as playing billiards, dice, or selling newspapers. Eventually, they started sweeping sidewalks in front of businesses in Harlem, further increasing their earnings. Bumpy's transition to life in Harlem marked a pivotal moment, redirecting his path away from formal education towards the streets, where he cultivated relationships and began his journey into a world teeming with challenges and opportunities. He was evidently the mastermind of the group, quickly realizing that he and his comrades could enhance their earnings by providing protection to some of the burgeoning businesses in the neighborhood. It was in this capacity that he encountered Bob Hewitt. Hewitt belonged to the audacious toughs of Harlem who never ventured out without a knife, a baseball bat, or a pistol. Any excuse was ample reason to wield their weapons against the police or the Irish gangsters who dared to step foot in their territory. Among all these criminals, Bab was the most ferocious. Standing tall at 1.85 meters with an imposing build, he was someone you didn't want to mess with. His livelihood came from extorting money from local businesses for protection against the area's bullies. This led to an encounter one day between him and Bumpy, stemming from a minor conflict of protecting a store. At that moment, he could have easily knocked Bumpy out with a single blow. However, contrary to expectations, he admired the boy's bravery. This led to a proposal of partnership, marking the beginning of Bumpy's ascent into the underworld of Harlem. In the 1920s, Bumpy and his crew sustained themselves through extortion and theft. They didn't limit themselves to safeguarding grocery store or restaurant owners. They extended their protection to the proprietors of covert clubs and bars. Bob Hewitt, who had by then developed a fondness for Bumpy, proposed diversifying their operations by offering protection to the owners of clandestine lotteries in Harlem. Some of these proprietors were among the wealthiest in the neighborhood, earning thousands of dollars weekly. They spared no expense for protecting their money, seeking the toughest bodyguards in the area. Seeing an opportunity to further enrich himself, Bumpy grasped it. He became instrumental in providing security to these affluent lottery owners, solidifying his position and expanding his influence in Harlem's criminal sphere. This move opened new avenues for both wealth and power, marking the beginning of Bumpy's exponential rise in the underworld hierarchy. He quickly rose to become one of the best in his field, becoming one of the most sought-after bodyguards in Harlem. Day by day, his reputation grew, and he soon took off, thanks in part to someone known as the Queen of the Underground Lottery, Stephanie St. Clair. Stephanie, a French gang leader in Harlem, was deeply involved in the gambling business, and by the 1920s had established an extensive empire within the neighborhood. She hired Bumpy to safeguard one of her many clandestine lotteries. Impressed by his protection skills, she appointed him as her personal bodyguard. This marked the rapid forging of a friendship between the two. In St. Clair's residence, Bumpy admired not only her elegance, but also her readiness to fight fiercely to protect what was hers. The underground lottery generated substantial revenue in this part of New York, making it a target for the mafia's intervention. Dutch Schultz, a gangster associated with New York's five families, took charge of the situation. Operating in the Bronx, Schultz had amassed a fortune through alcohol smuggling during Prohibition. However, with Prohibition repealed in 1933, he sought other income sources. It didn't take long for Dutch Schultz to recognize an opportunity here. His goal was to secure a share of the profits. For those familiar with Schultz, they knew better than to take this threat lightly. Schultz was a paranoid figure who could kill for pleasure and responded to everything with violence. Stephanie St. Clair had genuine reasons to worry. Schultz began sending his men to Harlem, approaching lottery owners with offers to join forces, promising protection against the police and specifically safeguarding them from kidnappings. With Schultz's menacing advances, tensions escalated. The looming threat posed by Schultz's aggressive tactics raised alarms among the lottery proprietors. They felt compelled to consider his proposal seriously, given Schultz's notorious reputation for ruthlessness and violence. Stephanie St. Clair and Bumpy, given their roles in safeguarding these lotteries, found themselves at the forefront of this escalating confrontation. The threat, actually carried out by his own men, allowed Bumpy to establish himself in Harlem's gambling business. His empire expanded considerably, which did not sit well with the Queen of the Underground Lottery. The war between the two clans became inevitable. Despite this brewing conflict, Bumpy remained under the orders of Stephanie St. Clair. In the 1920s, Bumpy faced multiple arrests. Initially sentenced to a 2-year term out of the original 10 for theft, someone later sentenced him in 1927 to an additional 2 years for assault. Shortly after serving this sentence, I again imprisoned Bumpy after being convicted of robbery. But things took a serious turn for him after he completed this sentence. In the late 1931, Bumpy completed a 2.5-year term in prison and was released. During his absence, Stephanie St. Clair received a visit from Hewlett, who now worked for Schultz. Bob aimed to convince Clair to join Schultz's organization, which now included most of Harlem's lottery owners, a proposition that infuriated her. Pressure mounted on her clan. Constant attacks ensued after her dispute with Schultz. They became regular targets of drive-by shootings. Her employees faced brutal assaults and dire threats from unknown individuals who warned them against continuing to work for her. Despite these daunting challenges, the Queen of the Underground Lottery maintained her gambling empire. Many of her men remained loyal to Harlem's Queen. However, many couldn't withstand the intense pressures exerted by Schultz and his men. They had tried to resist as much as possible, but the continuous threats eventually wore down their desire to continue working with Sinclair. She was cornered, but there was still a glimmer of hope. She knew someone familiar would return. In Harlem, a familiar figure was about to return, someone always ready to fight, especially when a white man tried to take something from the African Americans. Bumpy was on the brink of making his comeback. 2 days had only passed since they released Bumpy from prison when he unexpectedly ran into Bob Hullett at a bar. He had to decide whether to align himself with the well-funded army of thugs supported by Dutch Schultz or with the cornered but fiercely determined Stephanie St. Clair. Of course, a rebellious Bumpy Johnson wouldn't openly support a white man over the interests of the African Americans in Harlem. After consulting with the Queen of Harlem and realizing the economic and human resources disadvantages they faced against Schultz, Bumpy's first task, along with his men, was to secure weapons. Bumpy was the strategist, and Nat, his childhood friend, was to settle scores with their small band of men. Facing Schultz's soldiers, considerably outnumbered, Bumpy had no choice but to opt for guerrilla tactics if they were to have any chance of winning, and they executed it remarkably well. Unlike Schultz's men, Bumpy and his crew seamlessly blended into the crowd as African Americans in Harlem, giving them an immense advantage when facing B's gang. However, it was a different story for Bab. He had many scores to settle with Bumpy and vice versa. The two clans clashed several times, but neither gained the upper hand. In April 1933, the final showdown between Bumpy and Bab eventually ended when Bob, in an unrelated matter to the Schultz-St. Clair feud, received a prison sentence of 2 to 5 years. After his imprisonment, most of his men abandoned him. The battle against Bumpy was almost over. Most of them surrendered, except for a few diehards like Ulysses Rollins, who replaced Bob as Schultz's chief confidant in Harlem. Schultz's intentions were clear. He wanted to defeat Bumpy, despite not underestimating his new opponent's reputation for danger. Bumpy recognized the challenges of facing Schultz. Schultz rarely visited Harlem, frustrating Bumpy as he had never had the chance to confront him directly. Schultz also always moved with multiple bodyguards, making the task even more complicated. Despite these difficulties, Bumpy had a card up his sleeve. His strategy involved contacting someone acquainted with Schultz, the boss of all New York's mafia, Charles "Lucky" Luciano. In late 1934, Bumpy reached out to Luciano to discuss the escalating war in Harlem. Luciano, aware of the situation in that part of New York, listened carefully to Bumpy but declined direct involvement. If he intervened, he had conditions: to regain control of the gambling business in Harlem and have Bumpy on his payroll for a weekly sum of around $5,000. Disappointed with the response, Bumpy warned Luciano that if he tried to harm the managers of the clandestine lotteries, he would have no choice but to face him personally. Luciano laughed off the threat, asserting Bumpy had no chance of winning a war against him. Bumpy, with a smile, retorted, "Schultz said the same thing, yet here I am 3 years later talking to you." Though impressed by Bumpy's audacity, Luciano stood firm in his positions, and for the time being, both men left things as they were. Meanwhile, in Harlem, tensions continued to brew, awaiting the outcome of this impending conflict. The ongoing war continued, claiming victims. In the summer of 1935, Bumpy and Rollins faced each other for the first time. The confrontation occurred while Bumpy was out dining with a girl. Walking calmly, Bumpy noticed Rollins pulling out a knife and charging at him. Both men fought on the ground for a while, and then Bumpy stood up, adjusting his tie. Rollins had severe cuts on his face and body, lying on the ground. Ligaments barely held one of his eyeballs, almost out of its socket. After the scuffle, Bumpy casually circled around and mentioned having a sudden craving for spaghetti and meatballs. They took Rollins to the hospital after he suffered severe injuries. True to his tough reputation, he left the same night, covered in bandages, seeking Bumpy. When he spotted him, he didn't hesitate. Rollins pulled out his gun, aimed at Bumpy's head. Fortunately for Bumpy, the bullet only pierced his hat, tragically ending its journey in an innocent woman's life, killing her instantly. They finally arrested Rawlins by a police officer who was at the restaurant that night. He received a severe sentence. Bumpy Johnson still longed for Schultz's downfall, and they would fulfill this wish in October 1935. Luciano and other members of the American Organized Crime Syndicate decided it was imperative to eliminate Schultz. Schultz was being pursued by the law, and to evade the situation and appease things, assassinated a prosecutor named Thomas DeWay. However, this solution was entirely unacceptable to Luciano and his associates. I gunned Schultz down in a New Jersey restaurant and later passed away in a hospital bed. Afterward, Bumpy's clan saw some changes as they continued navigating the tumultuous underworld of Harlem. The Queen of Harlem had triumphed. Harlem was once again free, and the war had finally ended. However, people still had questions about who would organize the clandestine lotteries now that Schultz was dead. Luciano would take over, potentially sidelining Bumpy from the game. Soon, Bumpy would find answers to these queries. About a week after Schultz's demise, Bumpy had another meeting with Luciano. With Schultz out of the picture, they met again, this time at the behest of the Italian mob boss. Luciano allowed Bumpy to speak first, and they discussed several points. Bumpy expressed his concern, acknowledging he couldn't win a war against Luciano, but couldn't sit idly by and allow the gambling business in Harlem to slip from the hands of African Americans. After listening to Bumpy, Luciano declared he would leave all the gambling actors in Harlem alone, at least those who had supported him during the war. However, he added that any new lottery opening in the neighborhood would fall under mafia control. Subsequently, Bumpy requested to become Luciano's partner in Harlem, ensuring that the mafia wouldn't attempt anything without his consent and participation in the business. Hours of negotiation followed between Bumpy and Luciano on these terms. Then Luciano remarked, "Don't you realize I'm doing you a favor? I could kill you right here and take control of everything." Smiling, Bumpy replied, knowing Luciano was too astute for such an act. They continued negotiating, shared laughter, and finally reached an agreement. Bumpy achieved peace with honor, challenging New York's most prominent boss. It was an accomplishment the Harlem residents wouldn't easily forget. Following the meeting with Luciano, everyone wanted to be friends with Bumpy. Bumpy Johnson relished his newfound status in Harlem. The attention and respect he received were palpable every time he entered a bar or club. People offered Bumpy Johnson complimentary drinks, and women, including some celebrities, approached him. However, what he cherished most about his new status was witnessing the respect that Italian gangsters showed for the deal he struck with Luciano. None of them could interfere with Bumpy's lotteries without facing him personally. The amicable relationship continued until 1936, when authorities imprisoned Luciano for pandering. Years later, authorities arrested Bumpy for assault after he defended one girl under his protection. I sentenced him to 10 years in prison and sent him to the Dannemora Correctional Facility. There were rumors that Luciano was serving his sentence there. There were rumors that, at some point, Bumpy saved Luciano in the prison yard by confronting a man who attempted to stab him. This act supposedly allowed him to enjoy good Italian food during his incarceration. I released a Bumpy from Dannemora in 1947. However, upon returning to Harlem, he noticed significant changes. When Bumpy expressed his desire to open a new lottery in Harlem, he received warnings about the Italian influence. "The Italians rule everything now. They might not even allow you to open a lottery," was the sentiment he encountered. Faced with this situation, he met with Joe Adonis, Luciano's interim leader in operations. Although he wasn't particularly fond of Adonis, Bumpy recognized his skills and loyalty. The Italian mafia, now in control of Harlem, welcomed Bumpy with luxurious gifts as a gesture of goodwill. They clarified that he couldn't do as he pleased anymore. He wasn't the king of Harlem anymore, and his dealings with the Italian mafia in the past had changed the dynamic significantly. After the leadership change, Bumpy refused to be intimidated. He emitted a small laugh, stood up with his men, and glanced at Adonis, saying, "You should let our mutual friend know what's happening. I'm not quite content with the situation. Please convey my regards to him in your next contact and let him know it was a pleasure to assist him during our mutual absence." This reference was clearly about the time he saved Luciano in Dannemora. In a subsequent meeting, Adonis questioned, "Why didn't you tell me about what you did for our friend in prison?" To this, Bumpy responded, "It wasn't my place to say." Following this, Bumpy reasserted his dominance in Harlem. After his agreement with the Italians, he opened his lottery on the Chosen Street, a business that would yield significant profits for a long time. His reputation continued to soar in the streets of Harlem, and everything seemed fine until he met a young man named Flash Walker. A friend who knew Bumpy as the Godfather of Harlem introduced Flash Walker, an orphaned and penniless young man seeking to work for Bumpy. On a December night in 1948, Bumpy, out of compassion, hired Flash to assist his wife with household chores. Flash 19 was described as talkative, with an almost hypnotic charm by some. Bumpy genuinely liked Flash, and the feeling was mutual. This affection almost made his two daughters jealous. Such was the fondness between them. Bumpy gradually started trusting Flash more, eventually offering him a position in one of his lotteries. Flash knew how to enchant people, coaxing them into betting more than they should, quickly becoming Bumpy's most profitable employee. Then came when Bumpy trusted Flash enough to allow him to accompany him to important meetings, including those with the Italians. Trouble brewed in 1949 when Flash Walker encountered a pimp proposing a lucrative deal. The pimp asked him to cash apparently stolen checks discreetly, a means for Flash to earn some extra cash on top of what he made with Bumpy. 4 months later, Bumpy received a call from his bank, requesting him to discuss his account. There, he learned about the fraud but resolved the issue. Furious, he returned home, nervously pacing a room, realizing that Flash could have caused him serious trouble. Adding to this, one of Bumpy's daughters mentioned that Flash had touched her buttocks, and not just hers, but also her sister's, and it wasn't the first time. As they spoke, Bumpy stormed out, headed for his Cadillac, determined to find Flash. Without uttering a word, he exited the car and landed a punch on Flash's face. Before Flash could comprehend what was happening, Bumpy pounced on him, hitting him and calling him names. Afterward, Bumpy discussed the situation with his old friends, who suggested he should have killed Flash. "You've earned an enemy for life, and he shouldn't stay alive." Despite his friends' advice, Bumpy continued to ignore them. Perhaps he still felt some affection for his protege. He would bitterly regret that choice when he discovered what Flash was planning against him. Flash was planning to hide a package of heroin somewhere in Bumpy's residence and then call the police to incriminate him. Upon learning of Flash's plans, Bumpy and his friends held an emergency meeting to discuss what to do. Once the meeting concluded, they set out together to track down Flash. Unfortunately, it was too late. Two undercover drug agents later arrested at his home Bumpy. They took him to the narcotics office, where he discovered that Flash had framed him and served as a witness in a heroin case. During that time, Flash told the police that he was selling drugs for Bumpy, an accusation that nobody, not even the narcotics agents, believed. No one had ever heard of Bumpy being involved in the drug business. Federal authorities intervened in the case, knowing that by arresting him, they could clean up Harlem by forcing him to give up the local drug dealers. He spent a fortune trying to prove his innocence, but unfortunately, it wasn't enough. The feds were relentless, pressuring him for names to drop the case, but Bumpy repeatedly told them to leave. Eventually, in June 1952, the trial took place. Throughout this time, he remained free on bail. The jury deliberated for only 3 hours before announcing the verdict. "I found Bumpy guilty on 2 counts of drug trafficking." It shocked his loved ones as the judge sentenced Bumpy to 15 years in prison. "I spent most of his time in Alcatraz, a penitentiary that housed some of the country's most dangerous criminals. Guards referred to prisoners by their identification numbers rather than names to dehumanize them." Bumpy's moral compass was a topic of discussion for many. Eventually, the authorities sentenced Bumpy to only 10 years in prison, and they released him on parole in 1963. The news of his return spread like wildfire through Harlem. The streets were bustling with people who cheered for him, clapped, and showered confetti as his car passed by. It seemed like he was the President of the United States parading. With tears in his eyes, he stood up and greeted the crowd. The people of Harlem hadn't forgotten him, even after all that time. However, this scene seemed to foreshadow a sort of farewell that wasn't far off. Bumpy had cardiac problems that began in 1967 and would ultimately end his life a year later on July 7, 1968. He was dining at a Harlem restaurant that night when his heart failed him. He was 62 years old. The sudden death of Bumpy shocked everyone. It marked the end of one of Harlem's most memorable underworld figures. Many described him as a gangster with a social conscience, a criminal who seemed to play the role of a philanthropist by helping those in need within his neighborhood. Nearly 100 people gathered to pay tribute to what they considered the Robin Hood of Harlem, a Robin Hood who remained an extortionist, pimp, and drug dealer. Yes, even though Bumpy insisted until his death that someone had falsely incriminated him for drug trafficking allegations in the 1950s, he eventually got involved in the drug trade later in the 1960s. Bumpy was, at last, a smart individual who could have become a lawyer or doctor, but ended up as a gang leader. It's said that he regretted not continuing his studies. I will remember him as the humble African-American who rose to the pinnacle of New York's criminal world. With just a handful of loyal men, he stood up against the powerful Italian mafia, becoming their only ambassador in Harlem. A gangster who spent 26 years of his life behind bars, described by the prosecutor in his trial as one of the most dangerous criminals in the history of Harlem.